1975, continuing the interview. Dr. Kurtzman, you were talking about the changes in the emphases in higher education, or rather, you were talking about the director of education and the changing role there.
Yeah, the movement, I started to say, has been, primarily sponsored by higher education institutions, was to separate the institutions. And that was understandable because my predecessors have all come from the public school system, and that's where their interests lie. When I came there, I think the pressure lessened, but it's back on again, although my successor has no, if he has any connection, it's more with higher education because he happened to have taught a course at Franklin Marshall College. He is an attorney by profession and not an educator. That was the movement to separate them. My feeling was that as you make changes in higher education, for example, you need to make the changes in the elementary, secondary, and vice versa. As a matter of fact, when Dr. Litchfield came here and he started to build up the academic requirements for this university, he found that the high schools weren't prepared for it. Mm-hmm. And he had a special program to get the high schools to bring up their standards to conform to the standards of the University of Pittsburgh. Well, we need that on a statewide basis, and I'm still to this day opposed to separating the two. But as I said, there's still movements in that direction. As a matter of fact, this was a report that was prepared largely by my staff when I was leaving. It's entitled the Department of Education.
Yes.
Accomplishments of the Department of Education. You may want to look at it. I think I've got another one.
Do you have
home.
Another copy? Oh, that would be fine.
And the other thing we did, it may have been more psychological than anything else, but there was an attempt made in the past to get to it, and that is to establish, to name the department to conform to its program, because it was called the Department of Public Instruction. Well, public instruction means public schools. Since we were concerned with the whole realm of education, public as well as non-public and higher education, the feeling was that the name of the department ought to be changed to the Department of Education. It took legislation to accomplish it, and we finally succeeded in doing it, and the result is that I was the last superintendent of public instruction and the first secretary of education.
Dave, of the various things that you have done in your life, which would you say had been the most satisfying to you, the most gratifying?
I would say my experience here at the University of Pittsburgh as the chancellor.
Why that rather than the secretary of education?
Well, because it gave me an opportunity to do something which was badly needed here. I'm not sure that I've contributed much to improving the quality of the institution. I think that quality was achieved before I got here. That quality was achieved by Dr. Litchfield. But the problem was that the quality that he established wasn't accompanied by the financial support that was needed. And I think that the university, with all the things that Dr. Litchfield did to bring it up to date, looked like it was all going to go down the drain. Because when I came here, the board had been talking about what they ought to do. Well, maybe we ought to eliminate the School of Engineering. After all, Carnegie Tech has got a good engineering school. We don't need one. I remember Dr. Crawford, who preceded me as the A, he was the acting chancellor before I became the acting chancellor, said, well, we were preparing architects when, engineers rather, when Carnegie Tech was preparing tinsmiths and so forth. They were preparing the technicians. Well, I'm not sure that that may have been correct way before my time in Pittsburgh. But it gave me an opportunity to preserve the university. And not only was that in itself a satisfying experience, but I had a group working with me. The faculty was most enthusiastically supportive. The students were supportive. The administrative staff was a support, even though some of them I didn't treat too well. For example, I eliminated several vice chancellors. Nevertheless, they—I don't know—they may have held it against me, but I didn't sense it. Well, some of them left the university after I eliminated their positions, so that it was really the university was undergoing a very crucial period of its existence, and I felt that, and the university community felt that I came to its rescue to this day. The same thing is true, and in fact, I remember when I was leaving the university, they were trying to do something for me special, and they were trying to work out some sort of a special retirement arrangement. And Mr. Denton asked his one of the men at the Mellon Bank, who was their actuarian, to figure out if they put in a certain number of dollars, what would it give me. And the fellow developed, and Mr. Denton said, you know, some of these people are pretty smart in what they're doing, but they're not very worldly. So this fellow said, my God, he said, for 2.5 years of service, you're concerned with the retirement arrangement? He said, yes, in those 2.5 years, he saved the university. And this was a kind of a feeling that you can't help. You have a certain amount of egotism in you, and you feel that you've really, that what you've done is appreciated. And not only that, I dealt with a group of people which were of a rather high quality. I remember when I first came with the Department of Education, they had a reception for me. And the people came in to greet me and so forth, greet Celia and me. And Celia compared the quality of the people that I had at the university and the people there. Some of them were the people who took care of the warehouse and so on and so forth. And you dealt with the higher level people, although as I proceeded there, we attracted more qualified people, and I might say one of the things that you asked me what we did, when I came with the department, of the professional staff, of which there were then about 1,200, there were 2 black professional people at any decent level. When I left, there were about 15. They were very enthusiastic about my contribution, what I did to them. And when I was leaving, there was a big luncheon, a couple of hundred people invited. And the black staff people said, we are going to that luncheon too, but we want to have a luncheon of our own for you. This was one of the things they presented me with.
Dr. Kurtzman is pointing to a humidor and pipe rack. I should point out, if you hear any knocks on the cake stall, Dr. Kurtzman's constantly having a pipe in his hand and is always emptying the bowl of the pipe. But Dave, all the way through this, you know, as you were talking about your feeling about the university, I was thinking how this circle was round and how you started out. Your family must have felt very so strongly about education to permit their youngest child to leave in order for him to get the proper kind of education.
Well, as
and you end up, this is your great pride, being an education.
But I don't consider that as something unusual in a Jewish family. Celia always says, you know, when you see people leaving, what do they honor, value most? And she always refers to the Fiddler on the Roof when they were leaving Anatevka. What did they load on the pushcart? Books. That was their greatest value. And so I don't consider that as unusual. I think this is the way of Jewish life.
I think that's a beautiful statement. And I was wondering if there was anything else that you would like to have on the record about some of your philosophies. You've given us an awful lot of your thinking. Some of your philosophies and attitudes that you feel that you would like to have as a permanent record.
Well, I think that the Jewish life is less restricted now than it used to be. Although I might say there's a feeling, particularly among the Jewish faculty members here, who had gotten places where there's now a push for, under this affirmative action program, to get more black people in, and they feel that this, they have just gotten to the point where they're given an even break when they have to share it and even step aside to make room for the blacks. Well, my answer is the blacks have a much greater liability against them than we did as Jews. We could change our names. Our faces were white. They can't do anything about their faces. And I felt, and as a matter of fact, this is why I said in the Department of Education, I took a position that if we have two qualified, two people of equal quality, I would give preference to a black person. This didn't make any friends among the white people on the staff, who said we've spent years trying to reach a point where we can become a bureau head or a or maybe a deputy, and you've put this obstacle in the way. My point is, if we look at the 13 staff members that we have, black staff members, we can't look at them as the only ones for promotion. We have to go outside. And we brought in, in fact, before I left, we got to the point where an assistant commissioner, which is assistant deputy for basic education, I brought in a black man from Philadelphia, and who had no connection with the, you know, with the Department of Education in the past. He was with the Philadelphia school system. And I think that we have to recognize that we cannot be too biased in our approach to the problem that the blacks are facing. I think this is a very important thing facing us in the future, because we are suffering by it. That is, our people are suffering by it, by virtue of the fact that, as I said earlier, they had just gotten to the point where there's less discrimination. Although I remember discussing with a man who used to be the superintendent of schools in Cincinnati, and is now with the Education Commission of the States, he's the head man there, and we were both on the President's Commission on School Finance. I served as a member of the President's Commission on School Finance, and he was a member of the commission. And one time at lunch we were talking about, and I said that anti-Semitism is declining. He says, "You're kidding yourself. It's still here." In fact, I was just reading in Newsweek a column by, what's her name?
Robert Tuchman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you, I remember you read it.
I haven't had a chance to read it, no.
Well, it's about, very, very interesting article as to how the Jew has always been used as a scapegoat for all the problems that any country had faced. And it may well be that it'll be returning here too. But I think we have to do our best not to make our religion an issue. Because very often I think that we make it too much of an issue instead of taking it for granted. We've reached a certain position. We are here because of what we are, not because of our religion. And we ought to be thankful that we're here despite our religion.
But didn't you have a great sense of appreciation for the fact that you were the first Jewish university president in the United States, leaving out Brandeis, but I mean, which is as Jewish auspices. But didn't you have a particular feeling about that? It was a feeling of
surprise, really. Because I think I told you the incident when Governor Lawrence, former Governor Lawrence, on the day that they announced my appointment and I was driving him home, and he said this was a great day for Pitt, it's a great day for Dave Kurtzman, but he says more important for Pitt that they would make a Jew as the head of the institution. I thought it was a personal compliment to me, and I thought that it was really an indication of the kind of attitude that may be changing. The fact that my religion was not held against me, because they could have found somebody else to take it over, I'm sure, but they felt that I was best qualified, and maybe I was in their minds anyway, but the fact remains that my religion didn't stand in the way. And I think one of the things I think may have happened here, it may have happened anyway, was the fact that I sort of broke the ice here. Since then, we have two deans of two important, one of the most important deans, the dean of the Faculty of Arts and Science, Jerry Rosenberg, and the dean of the School of Graduate School of Business, Jerry Zofer, certainly indicative that that the university is moving in that direction. Now, whether it's because I broke the ice, or whether it may be that there was a feeling that if they don't do it, the attitude, the Jewish community would take the position, well, now that they got rid of Dave Kurtzman, there are no more opportunities for Jews here. It may well be that that may have been in the back of their minds for doing the things they were doing, because the dean of the Faculty of Arts and Science, as I said earlier, it's the greatest dean. As a matter of fact, Dr. Crawford used to be the dean of the college, and he was the dean of the deans. Mm-hmm. And I think the dean of the Faculty of Arts and Science in their position, it's the largest part of the university. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a satisfaction. Now, neither of those two deans operate as Jewish deans. They're Jews, particularly Jerry Rosenberg, is a very devout Jew. But he runs the institution in such respect, and I think this is one of the challenges. We have a double challenge. We have to do better than a non-Jew to overcome the biases that may exist, because there are still biases. I said, this fellow said, don't kid yourself, there's still anti-Semitism. To overcome the biases, we have to be better than anybody else. And so when we reach any position of responsibility, not necessarily in the field of education, in industry, business, and so forth, that we try to surpass the others, not to show ourselves off, but to be able to overcome our handicap.
Betty, you've been quiet for these various sessions. I wondered if there was something that you might want to ask Dr. Kurtzman, or something that you might want to say.
Not really. I think you've covered most everything satisfactorily. I've been an avid listener.
Well, this has been a great experience, Dave, and I know that future scientists and historians are going to be very grateful to the Pittsburgh section of the National Council of Jewish Women for having the oral history of such a remarkable person. Thank you very, very much.
I'm sure there are other remarkable people, maybe more remarkable. I did something which is rather unusual in the terms of the Jewish community. But there are others who have made their mark in other ways, also, despite their Jewishness. For example, the number of people who have high positions in Westinghouse.
Who would have ever thought that your son, a Jewish boy, would be working for Exxon? I mean, this is how far we've come along, yeah, too, in that. Well, again, many, many thanks, and I hope that we haven't taken up too much of
your
time.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I don't know whether what we've talked about is going to be of any help to others. I hope that the oral history part will serve, if nothing else, as an encouragement for others to participate in community affairs. As I said, my participation in Jewish community affairs has been limited largely because of the time limitations, although I think the years that I served, I must have been on the board of the Jewish Family and Children's Service Agency.
Like 10 years.
10 or more years. And this was pretty much the limit. Oh, I belong to to organizations, but really not in a very active capacity. My most active capacity in the Jewish activities has been in that one organization.
Again, many, many thanks. After we turned off the tape, we continued talking, and I think that the things that you were saying about your commitment to your work and how it influenced your feelings about other involvements should be a part of this record. Would you mind?
Well, Celia's been critical occasionally in the fact that I put my responsibility to my work. This isn't the university. This was before I came to the university. We're in the Pennsylvania Economy League. Above my responsibilities to my family. Well, as I said, I think earlier, my children don't think so. They think that I gave them as much attention as they needed and were grateful for it, for influencing their lives. But I always felt that the response, and I've been fortunate in all my life to be involved in places where I had a responsible position. When I was at the Pennsylvania Economy League, I was the only Jew in the whole organization. And yet I had a very responsible spot in that organization. And when I went to Harrisburg in Governor Lawrence's cabinet as Secretary of Administration, well, there were other Jews in the cabinet, Ann Alpern and later Dave
Stahl.
Attorney Generals. Well, they were both Attorney General, Ann Alpern for the first half and he for the second half. There were so they were the other Jewish members of the cabinet. And later, when I moved into, for example, a sect of education, not only was I the first Jewish sect of education, I was the only chief state school officer of any state in the Union. I still had, well, there aren't any more now, but I was the only Jew when we used to get together meetings of, we used to meet about at least twice a year. I was the only Jewish chief state school officer. And, but that aside, my point that I was trying to make is that the reason I was is because I took my assignment seriously enough that I devoted myself completely to it. And when I undertook assignment outside of my job, it was the same way. You may remember, for example, when I was president of the Jewish Family and Children's Society, we had a very tough job to do. We had to let go of our director. And that was no easy task. But I felt that if it was a question of either he or the institution that would survive. I felt that the Jewish Family and Children's Service Agency would go down the drain if we didn't really do something about building it up. And so I spent an awful lot of time on it. The great help that I had there was Sal Shapiro. He was then vice president, and we worked, Sal Shapiro and Irma Meyerson was on the board.
Bob Cummins.
I'm thinking about those
yeah. of us who were the committee to meet and talk with Mike.
And, of course, my predecessor as president, Jack Rosenberg.
Oh, yeah.
And so, it was not the most pleasant job, and it took a lot of study because we wanted to make sure that we were reaching the right decision, not just as fairness to the then director, but as fairness to the whole institution. And so this is one of the reasons I couldn't, when I was here as the chancellor particularly, there was so much that had to be done. I just couldn't spare time for any other activities.
And you never lacked the courage to do the thing that had to be done.
That's right.
Because I'm thinking of that JFCS situation, which was very difficult, but you had the courage, and you have that kind of courage. You never have too much critical statements. People are aware of the fact that the objectivity.
I don't like to kid people. I've always quoted the former governor of Pennsylvania, Governor Duff, who used to say, if you don't lie, you don't have to remember anything. And I've always been forthright, in fact, sometimes too forthright. And this is the thing that got people to trust me, because they felt that I was really, that I was going to tell them the truth.
They hear from now until eternity, because every time we start on a subject, you have so much to contribute. But many thanks for the addendum.
Thank you.